From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1973 when a man named Garth Fagan explained that he was, quote, possessed in taking his dance company to Jamaica, his native Jamaica. But Fagan explained that he didn't have any money then, so he used his father's American Express card and charged flights and hotels for 16 dancers. This was a big deal and a bit risky. Garth Fagan's father would have maybe preferred his son become a doctor or maybe a lawyer, certainly not a dancer. Well, Fagan reserved a box for his dad at that show. And perhaps to his surprise, his dad showed up with a group of eight. He came backstage after the show, said he was amazed at the creative content and the intellectualism. His dancers thought his father came off as more gracious than Garth had described, but, you know, history, family history. And a year later, his father died of a stroke. Garth said he never would have known what his dad thought of his work if he didn't have that opportunity. Well, today, of course, you know who he is. Garth Fagan is a legend in the dance world, in the art world, we should say, a choreographer and a visionary. And he's getting ready for a new season that rolls out at the end of this month. He's going to be here coming up this hour. And alongside is P.J. Pennywell. Now, Norwood Pennywell is not only a dancer, but a choreographer and a good friend of Garth Fagan. I think the only person not named Garth Fagan who's done choreography for the company.
Yes,
is that correct?
Exactly.
All right.
Yes.
Pete, so PJ, it's great to see you here.
Good to see you too, Evan.
You're on PJ time, Garth's on Garth time.
Right.
He'll get here when he gets here.
Yes,
which is
he'll be on his way.
I will be beaming up soon. I will be honored to have him whenever he wants to come in here.
And just a quick correction, Evan, the inception of the company is 1970.
Oh, 1970.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And so, you guys have a new season rolling out at the end of this month here. And why don't we just start by explaining that I know Garth has done some choreography. You've done some choreography. Tell me what's coming up here.
Well, as far as my new work is concerned, it's called A Moderate Cease. And the music is by William Walton. I wanted to do a piece to classical music this time, just as a challenge. I love a lot of the classical repertoire, and Garth has used classical music quite a few times, so I just thought, well, now it's my time to dip my toe into classical music water and see what I can come up with. It's the Walton Cello Concerto. The cellist is Stephen Isserlis, and it's the Philharmonia Orchestra, a London-based orchestra. And I also wanted to use fewer people. I usually am able to use the full company, which is also wonderful because Garth and I are usually choreographing at the same time. And as of 7 years ago, this is a new procedure. Usually the dancers would be able to spend all of their time working with Garth. So now they have to sort of split their time between working with me and Garth. So just want to give the dancers a big shout out for being able to be flexible in that way. Because it's tough trying to create with, you know, two choreographers breathing down your throat. So, you know, thank you so much for the dancers. But this time I just wanted to use fewer people. I wanted to maybe get into a little bit more individual idiosyncrasies of each of those six dancers. There's six dancers.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how much more I could make each individual become a little bit more nuanced. The lead is Shadi Bully, who I'm considering my muse right now. We also have Guy Thorne. We have Vittorio June, Adrian Barber, Andrew David, and Nina Price. And that comprises my cast, and that's my dance.
When you create now, I know you've talked in different settings about sort of storytelling of choreography, and everyone who creates art is doing it with sort of a different frame of reference, context, intention. What's your intention when you go into to create?
Well, as you obviously heard, the storytelling aspect is something that I'm still not really sure where I want to touch down and how I want to approach that. So my job is to just come up with a dance that's coherent, something that's obviously watchable. You know, we love what we do, but we are paid performers, so we want to keep the audiences in coming into the theater. So, you know, I want it to be somewhat entertaining. There's something about spirituality that I also want to come across in the pieces, and not any specific denomination, but just a certain sense of yearning for something a little bit more than just the physical. So I try to create that as best I can through movement and through interactions between different dancers. So, you know, I just wanted to be pleasing.
Well,
and thought-provoking, maybe.
And as Mr. Fagan gets settled here.
There's the man right there.
I'm just going to ask you one more question.
Okay,
so he
yeah.
can, so, Hi, Garth. Great to see you.
Great to see you.
And you can take your time, get your headphones, grab some water, get that mic, because I want to follow up with one thing PJ just said, which I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that, you know, ultimately you still have to have people coming out. It is business. Mm-hmm. And for some reason for me, that took me back to a comment that one of the best chefs in this town made, talking about the food that he creates. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, there are nights where he would love to do sweetbreads and head cheese and stuff that's a little more, I guess, a little less in the mainstream, but a little bit more interesting to him. Mm-hmm. But he also knows he's got to have a burger on there.
Right.
You know, and I'm not at all sort of reducing your choreography in that way. But what he's saying is, you have to understand that people have to come in the door first, and then you can introduce them to something maybe different and special. Mm-hmm. Do you sort of feel the same way?
Oh, absolutely. And this is something that we've all learned from Garth. Garth always talks about the fact that his choreography works on several levels. You know, there's the thought-provoking aspect, there's the musical aspect, and then, you know, he definitely wants to have a certain element of the entertainment aspect of it. So I definitely... there's a good friend of mine, Anthony Summit. I always look for him whenever I'm done with a piece, and just, you know, by Tony's admission, he says, well, you know, I'm not really into the deep stuff. I mean, he can appreciate the deep stuff, but his thing is, I just want to make sure that you're still maintaining that Fagan, you know, interesting movement invention, the physicality. If I see that you're still working on those lines, then I know you're in the ballpark. So, you know, I definitely want to make sure that things are entertaining and things are thought-provoking. But, you know, Garth always says that he also wants to put some meat in there, something a little bit meatier, that yes, you can appreciate the physicality, but I also want to challenge the audience to go a little bit deeper than just the physicality. So that's the balance that I'm trying to find, you know, to keep it entertaining, but also to have a little thought-provoking aspect. So I'm learning from the master.
Still learning. After all these years.
That's
Garth
right.
Fagan, and by the way, it's great to see you in the studio. How are you?
Great to see you. And it's warm in here.
You know, Garth did tell Norm Silverstein in an interview a couple of years ago that your favorite thing about Rochester is the springtime, because winters can be tough here, particularly if you're not from here. You love the springtime. So this is not your favorite time of year, is it?
Snow for me is only for skiing, not for shoveling. And PJ talked about his friend Anthony Summit. He happens to be the husband of Paula Summit, who danced with my original company. So he knows a little something about dance. And it gave him, what, three kids and one grandchild.
Well, we were just talking about PJ's work for the upcoming season. Can you tell
Beautiful
me about some
work.
Can we tell you about can you tell us about some of your work, sir?
Yeah. PJ's piece is wonderful. It's the sixth piece, and I'm thrilled to smithereens. But anyway,
<Thank you. coughs>
my piece is called In Conflict. And I want to make the distinction between in conflict and conflicted. If you are conflicted, you have decided that you are conflicted. If you're in conflict, you're still struggling to get to either side of the fence. And it starts off with In Conflict A, danced by Natalie Rogers, my Bessie Award winner, like PJ. And she helped me on Lion King, like PJ. So anyway, they're my chillin'. Okay. and it's a beautiful, beautiful solo. Then we go to In Conflict B, danced by Vittorio Jean, one of my star performers. And it's the male aspect, the way we men deal with conflict, minimally, and move on to the next thing and watch the game and okay. So it's just that interesting contrast. Then we go to non-conflict, and it's a relationship between Natalie and PJ. And their lovers, married, whatever, but there is something wrong with this relationship. It's warmish, but it's not as warm as it could be, ought to be, must be, any all of the above. You fit in the blanks. And then the last section is for three couples and one single guy. And it's called WIN, W-I-N, conflict. And this is very positive, positive relationships. Heterosexual relationships, homosexual relationships, and the single guy who keeps changing between everything and tasting some of everything. And he hasn't made up his conflicted mind yet, but he will.
I'm curious to know how you view sensuality through dance. And I ask this in particular in light of the fact that when you were, I think in the 1970s, that was back when, you know, you were...
Before your grandma was born.
From what I've read, Garth.
Right, right.
That there was this idea at the time that it was, well, in your own words, that the critics loved it, but it was... You called it even a little vulgar, pretty sexual. But dance itself is pretty sensual, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. But
there's nothing cheap about that or easy about that, I guess.
No, but the critics were accustomed to fairy tales and nice, pretty little dances with nice, positive, pretty conclusions. Lots of my dances leave it open to you to fill in the blanks. And we're in more contemporary times. We have women as CEOs, airline pilots, whatever, and men staying home to take care of the kids.
Less so when you started choreographing.
Yes. So it's just a little difference in tone, but the dancing, the quality, the technique, the nuances, those are most important to me and always evident. And the score to my new piece, I forgot to tell you, Evan, is Arvo Pärt, one of my favorite composers, and just beautiful music.
Bill, do I have the? When does this all go down, by the way? Because I didn't know if you, I'm glad you're on the microphone here to help me out. I've got to sift through my notes here.
No problem. Welcome. I'm happy to help you out. November 30th through December 4th, the company's performing at Nazareth College Arts Center. And just want to let everybody know that you can get your tickets are on sale now at garfagandance.org, boxoffice.naz.edu, or call 585-454-3260 to get your tickets. And I'm sure right after I say this, we're going to sell out.
There you go. It's the connections effect.
There you go. Make it work. Make it work.
Nazareth College Arts Center is a great place. Having taught at NAS and been over there, they take so much pride in that. So there you go. The 30th through the 4th at NAS College Arts Center. I want to listen to a clip, and I was telling PJ about this before, but I was laughing because we're getting ready for this, and what do I see that is on Conan O'Brien but Louis C.K. talking about Alvin Ailey, of all things? You know, and Alvin Ailey had been featured, and Louis C.K. said, this is great, but then he had a big butt about dancing, and I thought, uh-oh, here comes Louis about dancing. We're going to see if our panelists think that Louis C.K. had some wisdom here.
I enjoyed the Alvin Ailey, the dancing.
Oh, you like the dancing thing?
Yeah, dancing is really inspiring to watch when somebody, you know, it's a terrible life choice. It's the dumbest, it's the worst career choice.
You're saying dancing is a terrible career choice. You like watching it, but you think it's a terrible career choice.
It's the worst available career choice.
What are you talking about?
It's a massive amount of dedication followed by giving up. That's what FDA all have to do. Because
what are
nobody,
you talking
there's
about?
Like three dance jobs on the planet Earth.
There's three dance jobs on the planet Earth, and there's three guys in studios, so this must be all of them. Garth, what do you think of that?
Oh, I think it's funny, it's humorous, but it is not true.
There you go.
It's not true.
Don't dissuade people from getting into this line of work.
No, my company is 46 years old. And we have been touring the world, been on every single continent except Antarctica, toured every place, Europe several times, every single major city and what have you. And the Alvin Ailey Dance Company, he was probably talking about Ailey too, but the Alvin Ailey Dance Company is still wonderful. And Alvin Ailey's Revelation is one of the masterworks of all time. And Alvin was my mentor and friend and gave me encouragement and money in the early days of my company, as did Merce Cunningham. He didn't give money, but he gave me encouragement.
So, all right, well, PJ, what do you think here? Is it the worst career choice?
No, it's not the worst career choice, but where Louis is correct is the massive amount of dedication you need.
Yeah.
And you know what? There are some times where you feel like you want to give up. So he's got his finger on that too. But the professionals that you ultimately come to see at the theater, they haven't given up. They've figured out a way either through mentorship or through, you know, just love for the person that they're working for or love for the arts or self-esteem or whatever. But they've figured out how to work past that giving it up stage. The only way you can get better is you got to pass through that giving up stage. But, oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of dedication is necessary, a lot of pain, a lot of it's not pretty. But if you stick with it, it's definitely rewarding. I mean, the process is not always pretty, but if you stick with it, it's definitely rewarding.
Can you remember any point, especially in your early career,
yes,
where you thought this
is Don't get me started.
Where you felt like this has pushed me past the breaking point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But what gets you through, one, is leadership. So, you know, Garth is at the helm. And Garth is a master at encouraging you. Garth has to come at you at any particular day from a different headset. He's got to either say, okay, today it looks like, you know, P is having a hard day. I'm going to give him this day to sort of let it go. Then the next day, he could see that I'm having a hard time, but maybe I'm just being lazy. And he's genius at knowing the difference between when you're just being lazy or when you have just reached a threshold and you just can't go any further. So his job is to navigate 16 people at any given day on any, you know, from any perspective to try and motivate them to continue on. And he's done a great job of doing that. But, you know, we all love Garth, so we're going to we appreciate what it is he's doing for dance history, what he's doing for his employees and what he's doing for the city of Rochester. So we're working past the whatever give up moments that we might have with the pain or whatever.
But Bill, this is what I love, is that you got Louis C.K. talking dance. I mean, we're getting more mainstream now, which is a good thing.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing.
I saw Conan on TV at Alvin Ailey, and Conan got a little stuck in his little tap thing. But it's really wonderful that dance has risen to the place where it's in the consciousness of the United States right now and the world. And one of the things that PJ touched on was Garth dealing with his employees. One of the things that Garth has done also has revolutionized how we think of dance as a business. Because generally, dancers are employed for seasons. Garth employs us for 365 days a year. He takes care of us in terms of medical, dental benefits, retirement benefits, paid vacations, the whole kit and caboodle. With Garth treats us as professionals, as we should be treated.
And they're 75% college graduates, so they prepare themselves for life. Bit is a daddy of two, you know. What PJ didn't mention as one of the benefits are the standing ovations that he gets and the long meandering line of women at the stage door afterwards waiting to just gaze on his presence and give him meals and treats.
It was just that I was in so much pain that I sort of don't recognize that.
I see.
But I'm going to start watching now, though. I'm going to start looking out for those lines.
Oh, we're talking about the upcoming season, and It's great to have Garth Fagan in studio. First time since I've hosted the show that I've had Garth Fagan in studio, so I want to do this more often. You are a real treasure. It's great.
I was thinking, boy, Bob, you have lost years.
Listen, I know you know Bob Smith well, and Bob may even be listening. He is also
big
a legend.
Love, Bob.
He is
love
also Bob. A legend in this community. Absolutely, I take that very seriously, just as anybody in your orbit takes seriously just being around Garth Fagan, what that means. So
you're doing a great job, Evan.
Well, definitely.
That's very
absolutely.
Kind.
Now, yeah, man.
So, Garth, you've also said there's something I kind of want to talk about that has come up in different arts communities, but not yet with dance. So I want to hit this with you. I want to say maybe last fall, or actually maybe this spring, we talked to Blue Cease and the folks from Roco. We talked about the art community. And we had a conversation on, are we really an arts town, or do we just like to feel like we're an arts town? Because we have so much talent and a diversity of talent, different genres, different fields. But you told Norm Silverstein, CEO on Norman Company, that we got to get more people who get out a little bit more. Who, you know, I went to one show at Jiva this year, so I love the arts community. Or I saw a performance
two seasons ago. Right.
So I'm an arts enthusiast. Are we an arts town?
Yes, we are an arts town, but it's at a 50-50 split. We need to get more people into the arts the way people are in sports, and I'm not knocking sports. I'm a big soccer fan, trophy and everything else. So I love sports, but the arts nourishes you in other than physical ways, in mental ways and emotional ways and familial ways, that we could have more people in Rochester doing that. And we're glad that we have all these colleges around. So we have lots of college students, and they're investigating things and searching and seeking. But some people are satisfied when they see one play. And even when you see one play or one dance, the more times you see it, the more nuances you get. And then one day the full picture will wallop you, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Bill, how do you feel about us as an arts town, whether we really fit the bill in terms of supporting consistently?
In terms of supporting consistently, I would say no. I think Rochester is we're a hit and miss sort of thing. We like Gar said, and like you said, we like to see one thing, and we say that we're done. A true arts town would be you go to Jiva on Tuesday, then you go see Garth Fagan on Wednesday, then you go see Push Theater on Thursday, and then on Saturday you go to Muck. You know, that's
or
how.
Or go back to Garth Fagan.
Or go, oh,
we're going. We'll we have a different program. Yeah, that we'll day too.
Coming back to Garth Fagan on the Sunday matinee.
Right.
To see the Garth Fagan dance student ensemble, of which I'm the director and choreographer.
So we can do better.
I think we can do better. We will pay hundreds of dollars to go see Buffalo Bills play. You know, and
who won? One.
They did win, and I'm a Bills fan, so forever, whatever happens.
Probably.
So we need to have that same kind of dedication to the arts.
No, it's interesting. I mean, as a Cleveland native, my Browns are 0-11, and they're still, you know, essentially selling out. Now, not everybody's showing up this time of year when they're 0-10, but they have people paying hundreds of dollars for tickets for an 0-10 team, and yet, you know, the theater community in Cleveland, the arts community, works very hard. But they got to really bend over backwards to get the public to kind of take notice at times, and that's kind of
and,
the point.
And the level of dedication and the depth of rigor that it takes to be an actor or a dancer is the same or even more than a professional athlete.
Absolutely. Well, PJ, how do you feel about the status as an arts town?
I agree. I concur with what both Garth and Bill, the points Garth and Bill made. But we also want to recognize the fact that the local arts community is still trying to thrive as best they can. So while it's not necessarily the greatest arts town that it could be in terms of audience participation, we still got to give kudos to the arts organizations that are still trying to thrive in this climate, you know. And we also have to factor in the electronic age A lot of people would rather just Netflix and chill, you know, as opposed to coming out and seeing live performance. And like Garth says, they're missing out on what it is that's important about that live connection that you need to experience. It's not just about entertainment. It's about the fact that you're watching a group of people who have, you know, put years of dedication into what they're doing and seeing them perform at their best. There's something that comes across more than just the entertainment value. You actually become a part of what it is that's happening during that live experience. In fact, there's a lot of times that people will come up to Garth or the dancers after the performances and they'll say, man, y'all made that look so good. I actually felt like I could get up there and do that with you. So, okay, you know, no, you take that because that means that you connected with them.
There's
on
no
a very
way
deep
they
level.
Can get up there and do that with
well,
you.
Well, you don't necessarily have to tell them that, but it's going to keep them coming back. Oh, God, I'm glad you felt that way. That's good. But in all seriousness, that's a good sign. That means that they connected on a level that's deeper than just, oh, wow, you guys look great turning and kicking and jumping.
In terms of the physicality, PJ, are there, this is going to be a super ignorant question, but I'm curious, is there a smaller sort of core of possible future dancers who are 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 because there's a little bit less physicality in society? We're a little more addicted to technology. We're doing a little bit less.
Absolutely.
Yes?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We, I mean, if you think about, when Garth started, Garth says that he started with people that weren't necessarily dance trained.
Mm-hmm. Basketball players.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, bottom of the barrel.
Bucket.
Bottom of the bucket.
Not as deep as the barrel.
Yeah.
Bottom of the bucket butts.
Yeah, but you know, these people who weren't, quote, dance trained, right, they still had physicality as part of their daily routine. Yeah. You know, from elementary school, there was not only PE, but there was also recess to let yourself out. I was just talking to a good friend of mine about the whole idea of once you are actually physical for an hour during your class day, it sort of calms you down, you know, because you have actually just exerted yourself, and it sort of focuses your mind also because you've just been trying to not, you know, trying to bounce a basketball or trying to catch a football or trying to kick a soccer ball. That actually focuses your mind. So when you do go back into the classroom, you're settled physically because you're worn out and your mind is also sharp. So you're ready to receive more information. You know, that's just not happening now.
Garth, is that disappointing to you?
Yes, absolutely true. And as I'm a great grandfather now. And I stress with my great-grandson and all the kids at Thanksgiving Day, you're leaving those whatchamacallums on the stairway and you're coming to the dinner table and you're sitting and you're looking in our eyes and we're celebrating all of your achievements. We want to know. And yes, you emailed us, but it's not the same thing as hearing you verbalize it and seeing the gleam in your eye or seeing the sadness in your face. So As adults, we have to try and nourish them to that. And yes, they have to be a part of their electronic world, but they have to keep some of the values and the good things of the non-electronic age, like communication and speaking and looking you in the eyes and smiling and frowning, whatever. But things that we can read without words, you know.
Like... If Bill and Nikki Ferguson, Bill's wife, don't mind me mentioning this, they're, as far as I'm concerned, they're a perfect example of how you can rear your children. So it's very clear that at certain times they're going to need their electronic gadgets. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, those two boys, WD and Nicholas, can go out in the woods and just make up all kinds of games with sticks and whatever because they've encouraged that aspect of their intelligence as well as also being able to out email any of us or out game any of us on a electronic device. So that's they are really good at that balance.
Case in point, today school was out today, so the boys were out all morning. This morning there was nothing but snow outside. Not 1 minute did I have to tell them, did I get, oh, I'm bored. And they're probably still out there.
I don't understand boredom. I mean, that word.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, and I guess I can, I don't want to be like holier than thou. I'm sure if I go back to my childhood, I could imagine times where I was bored, but that just meant go outside and find something to
exactly.
do.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Create something to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, again, we are now starting to move into the get off my lawn territory of the program, so maybe I should veer this direction. But to kind of close the loop on one aspect here, because we were talking about our status as an arts town, I want to know how you view dance's status within the arts community. Because again, you said in years past, and I don't know if you meant you still feel this way or you felt this way, say 40 years ago, you called it the stepchild in the arts community. Is that something that you felt early on, or you still feel that way?
No, I felt early on.
Okay.
And it's not the firstborn either. Music is the firstborn because, you know, you go to the concerts and you hear it. Then I'd say drama next and then dance. But the first thing you do in childbirth is dance. It's movement on your part and on your mother's part to get you into this world. Mm-hmm. So you were an original dancer. Then you crawl, then you get up and you toddle, and then you walk and you run. And Nicholas is now running and kicking and doing everything. And I remember when I could throw him up. Well, I can still throw him up in the air, but I can't throw up his bigger brother, who is 7 years old, his older brother, who does a good job, you know, nurturing him and keeping him in his place and loving him too.
But you don't feel that sense of separation now in the arts community?
No,
that you felt. That's good.
No,
that's good.
Because we use great music and we use great sets from sculptures, Martin Perrier and great sculptures, and we have drama. Not drama with the capital D, but a little drama. A nice touch, a soft kiss. Those are dramatic things that we can do in dance.
You probably get sick of talking about it, but maybe what annihilated that sense of dance as a lesser form, maybe we didn't even have to wonder after Lion King. Maybe you look at that because, as you said, you went there going, dance, Disney, well, how's this going to work? And it turns out to be this phenomenon.
It's a phenomenon in, what, 7 countries around the world right now. We just opened in Holland 2 weeks ago in Amsterdam. And the audience is there. The good news is they all come to see us, the dance company, afterwards, because what they got in the show impressed them so much. And I thank Julie Taymor for choosing me to do that. And I've won every possible award around the world for it. And the human beings, different races, cultures, languages, they cheer and they scream in the same places. So there's something humanistic about
it. That's beautiful.
Which overrides everything.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you know, I'm glad to know then that you feel dance's part in the art world isn't the way it was 40 years ago. It made me think of Cat Schwartz. Do a little Google search for me because I'm going to speak out of school a little. It was either Mozart or Beethoven who they were playing this newfangled instrument called a piano. And people were like, that is what you play when you're not serious about music. Come on, piano. Really? So they would have these home concerts where they would have these piano offs. And I thought it was Mozart. He would smoke them. But it was more just a parlor game. And they said, eventually you'll get more serious and you'll get away from this piano.
Right.
Well, now, do we view the piano as some sort of lesser instrument? Absolutely not. I'm trying to figure out how to get my 4-and-a-half-year-old to want to take piano. I know dance may not be in his future because I've seen him dance.
Yeah.
And I know already.
Took after daddy.
He's probably not. He's probably not going down your road. But no, it's just interesting. The evolution of art in that way, I think there's a natural progression, and I'm just so glad to hear that. I'm way late for our only break of the hour, so let's get our only break of the hour. I'll come back, get a phone call. We'll share some audience interaction. If you want to call the program with Garth Fagan and friends and PJ and Bill, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll make sure we reset exactly why they're here. Well, they're here because it's just fun to talk, right? We're having a good conversation.
Yes.
But they've got a lot coming up here with the new Garth Fagan dance season, November 30th through the 4th at Nazareth College Arts Center. We'll make sure you're set for that as well as we continue on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, pundits said Donald Trump would have trouble with women in this election. And he did not. Well, I should at least say, he did not with white women. Donald Trump dominated with white women on Election Day, and our panel of women explains why they supported Donald Trump despite what pundits predicted. Then in our second hour, nature deficit disorder. What is it? How to deal with that? Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If you haven't heard me say it enough, to the extent that this program ever sounds reasonably well-prepared or intelligent, it's usually because of the great people around us, from Megan Mack, Rob Braden Engineering, Kat Schwarz is in the booth today, and Kat, of course, she says, yes, it was Mozart. She knows her bachelor's was in
music
performance.
You better work that Google.
Thank you, Kat. That's awesome. Thank you very much. And during our brief break, you know, Bill had brought up the fact that that this particular moment on this broadcast, I think it feels certainly good to me and hopefully to listeners who we cover a lot of wide range politics. We cover race, we cover poverty, and you have to. But lately, there's been a lot of that for good reason. We had an election, and Bill was just saying, you know, this particular moment, maybe this day, this conversation feels a little bit like a balm. Is that fair, Bill?
I mean, definitely. It's always wonderful to go beyond the daily pressures and the daily stresses. That's one of the wonderful things about art is art communicates something to you that you can't touch and you can't sometimes articulate, but you know you've been touched by something that's going to change your life and carry you forward or through or past some harrowing or difficult situation.
Absolutely. You know, and I felt this way when we talked to songwriters after Leonard Cohen died. Not to say that art is just escapist or it's less serious than those other subjects. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think art is, this is a reminder of how vital art is in our community, these moments. What do you think, PJ?
Yeah, I agree. It's not escapist at all. But what I love about, you know, I'll toot Garth's horn at this point again. What I love about arts in general, but especially about what happens in the theater at Garth's productions, is that whatever your predispositions are, I mean, you can come in. I mean, even if you are there because you've heard it's something that you need to see, but you think you're not going to like it, or you might know what it is that you're getting ready to see, and he's still going to bring something fresh and unusual to your eyes. But once you're in that seat, regardless of whatever your predispositions are, I mean, you could, it's a political season and we're all feeling however we're feeling about it. You could be sitting next to somebody that's completely far to the other side of the aisle than you. You could be sitting right next to them and you might not necessarily, you could even feel the tension or whatever. But by the time the show starts and by the time you get to that first intermission, you realize, you can just, I mean, I now get a chance to sit in the house sometimes and watch my choreography and then just see some of the people respond or see some of the people respond to Garth's work. And you can just see the tension drain from their bodies. You can realize that, okay, these people have no, I care about what it is they like versus the person next to them. They just know that now we are in an area of communal appreciation, and that's what's really important about getting people in the theater.
By the way, PJ, what is it like for you to actually sit in the audience and to absorb the reaction? Are you looking for something in them in particular to see if they're sort of receiving it the way you had intended?
Yeah, I love being in the house, finally.
It means he's not performing.
That rigor.
He's resting his legs on his back.
But that's just another lesson that I'm learning from Garth, is how you switch from the critical eye of the creator, because Garth is always like, you know, Pete, don't be so, you know, now you can sort of just let it go. You're still being a little bit too critical about it. Just kind of sit back and just let it sort of ruminate, let it start to steep, and it'll eventually get itself together. But switching from the critical eye to then becoming an audience member. So I'm not looking for adulation or anything. I'm just sitting in the seat. Like Gar says, I just want to sit in the seat and then shut down all the critical elements and just watch it as an audience member. Does it move me? Is it something different? Is it something unusual? Is it boring? As an audience member, what would I do differently? So it's interesting to make that switch, but it's something that is important if you really want to try and better yourself as a choreographer, is to be able to actually look at it as an audience member and see how you respond to that.
And Evan, you used a wonderful word. You said a balm, B-A-L-M. And there is one of my favorite healing songs is by Mahalia Jackson. She's been passed on quite a few years. There is a bomb in Gilead that sets the captive free. And that can calm me down when deficits are looming their head, when dancers are injured, whatever. You find that solace from music and the beauty of her voice, the poetry beyond just the words she's singing, and the notes that she could make and choose.
Well, let me grab some phone calls from listeners who've been waiting. Hoover in Pittsford. Go ahead, Hoover.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, Garth, I got to remind you, you came to Rochester in the early 70s when things were just developing here, and I was just getting out of school, and I was playing hockey and playing baseball, and I heard about your program, and I said, I want to take some classes from that guy. So it was you, it was George Francis with the Rochester Ballet, it was Enid Botsford with the Botsford School in Pittsburgh, it was Dick Bull out in Brockport with his company, David Smearing, who was an accompanist, all these cool people from back in the old days, and you were part of that. And I was not a dancer, but you made
me. You were a wee babe, a wee babe.
We had a good time back then.
We sure did. We sure did. And all the names you included, Enid Botsford and everybody, we were all pushing dance, introducing dance, ballet, my contemporary dance, jazz, and then later on hip-hop. But, I mean, all forms of dance, because human beings can dance, can move, and can enjoy it.
And you made us all feel that way, too. You and the rest of the apostles of dance back in that era, even Elizabeth Clark, she had that old church over on Prince Street.
Yes.
Used to get grants from the New York State Council on the Arts and that. And we'd go to grammar. I was in her company for a while. I used to go to grammar schools and perform for the kids in elementary school. But, you know, you're up there on the totem pole of all the key people here in Rochester for a lot of good reasons. And, you know, you've expanded not only through dance but all other cultural means, and you've become quite the ambassador around the world for what you've done. So congratulations, you're a good guy. When I run into you next time, I'm going to remind you that I said all these good things and you can buy me a drink.
blessings, and big love, as Bob Marley would say.
Thank you, Hoover. I was just admonished by my colleague Veronica in the newsroom. She says, you guys are having entirely too much fun in there. Too bad, Veronica. We deserve it. When Garth Fagan's in
Absolutely.
The house, we're here
Absolutely.
To have a good time here. Sandra in Canandaigua on the phone next up. Go ahead, Sandra.
Two things. First of all, I used to work at a jewelry store in Midtown Plaza, and Garth would come in and buy the most beautiful jewelry for his dancers for their birthdays, and I always admired that a great deal.
Thank
also,
you.
And I wonder if he remembers Thelma Barakri. I used to dance with her.
Yes. And you always gave me good value and good quality, and you loved 18-karat gold, and so did I.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a few diamonds thrown in.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just sprinkle
emeralds. Emeralds. I'm wearing one you sold me.
Good. You know, this conversation reminds me of something else that you've said. You got to give me just a little glimpse, Garth. You've said what you also, another thing you love about this town is there's a really good house party scene. That there's, what's going on at these parties, man?
Well, in Rochester parties, you go to the homes, you get good wine and good beer and a meal, you know, with lamb chops or pork chops or whatever, but a meal that you can eat. Lots of New York City parties, you get, you know, chips and pretzels and all of that good stuff, which is nice for snacks. But I love Rochester house parties. You get salads, you get everything. The ones I go to, like Evans. You all have to come to Evans.
When is that again, Evans?
Right.
Yeah, no. Listen.
Planning now.
It is on. If you ever, no, you just tell me when.
And you're gonna have good wine. I know that. I know you're gonna have good wine.
We can make sure there's some good wine right there. No, it's nice to hear what we got over Manhattan on certain things.
Absolutely.
You know, there you go. Let's see here, Danny and Brighton next up. Go ahead, Danny.
Hi, I'm a dancer. I've been a dancer all my life. I'm actually a dance movement therapist. And I'm calling because I want to respond to the part about a couple of things. I have three things on my mind. One about the community, about whether we're not quite a community of artists, you know, going to one concert one night the other, something else the other night. That's really impossible for anybody to do nowadays. I mean, even to buy the tickets at Nazareth, it's expensive. To go to Jiva, it's expensive. People have to work, and it's not easy now. So, you know, we can afford to go to Muck maybe every night, but we can't afford to go to all the wonderful things that the gentleman who was describing how he wished it would be, that it would be that way. It's just not possible. The other piece I wanted to say is that I know that you're talking about the bomb and, you know, having a fun time in the studio, but there is the reality of what's happening today politically, and I often think about the difference between art for art's sake and also art for social justice sake. And what went on during the 30s and all the great WPA choreography that happened. And it seems to me that this may be a time and an era where we do have to go for art, for social justice's sake, that there may have to be a purpose in terms of what is happening in the art. And that doesn't mean it can't be aesthetic and it can't be beautiful, but I do think that these are times that are testy and that artists have a task. And the third thing I wanted to mention about the social status of dance, to my mind, I think, well, being a dancer and loving to dance, and dance is my heart and soul. And when Garth was talking about, well, we start dancing when we're born, we're even dancing when we're in our mother's arms. And we're being rocking and learning about what it's like to have synchronous, connected movement. All of that is important. But the reality is that dance often is just viewed as entertainment, as competition, and in terms of sex, too. And if I look at my own profession as a dance therapist, dance therapy is not recognized in the way that it should be, despite the fact that we have, for half a century, been doing what neuroscience is now proving to be effective.
All right, Danny, I've got to jump in and let our guests respond. And there's a lot there, but I think it's important to let our guests just address whether they think social justice or sort of choreography in that vein, is it more required now, as she says, or you know, can you force yourself in that direction? Does it come more naturally? I mean, PJ, we talked at the start of the hour that, you know, every artist is a little different in terms of how they decide to create and for what intention. What do you make of what Danny said?
I'm in a unique position. I talk with people about this a good amount in terms of aesthetics versus social activity. And the reason why I say I'm in a unique position, and this isn't to necessarily overemphasize the idea that the company is a predominantly Black company, and Garth can explain, you know, the nuances of what that all means socially. But as far as I'm concerned, they're outside of the Ailey Company and maybe Lines, there's not really a lot of companies that are doing, a lot of companies that are predominantly Black that are doing the kind of thought-provoking works that Garth is doing. So, and this might sound like a cop-out, but for me, that in itself is the social activism.
No, I don't think that
sounds like a
cop-out
at all. Because we don't really get a chance to see people of color necessarily in this kind of an arts organization presenting the kind of works at this level of sophistication with so many different levels of interest. And this isn't to minimize anybody else's company, but I'm just thinking on this level, I don't really think that you see that picture that often. The positive messages that Garth presents. I think without necessarily hitting you over the head. And now, if we're talking about the 70s, Garth's work was a little bit more radical than the 70s. But, you know, you move on. And I'm not minimizing your point, Danny, at all. I'm just my response, because I am in this unique situation and being in this organization, is that the whole idea that the picture that you're seeing in and of itself is a kind of area of social activism.
All right, and Garth, I'm down to about 90 seconds. I don't want to cut you off, but why don't you respond to Danny however you want there. Go ahead.
No, wonderful. And as far as Dan Serpy is concerned, we're lost without Maria.
De La Cruz.
Yeah, De La Cruz, who does our Dan Serpy. So it's value intensive. But we have to deal with the social issues. And I have a social issue that was dumped in my lap, and in Evan's lap and everybody's lap, that I'm going to have to deal with. Yeah. And I haven't thought about it and felt it enough yet. But in Hamilton, they dealt with it when they booed the vice president to be. But he was so articulate in his response to it that shows hope, as opposed to gloom that some people were feeling.
Okay. Well, Danny, thanks for the call. And since I'm down to about just under 40 seconds here, what else we needed to know about what's coming up here? And Garth, PJ, Bill, what do you want people to know about what's coming up here?
Did we mention the kids performing at the matinees?
Not really.
A Saturday matinee, Sunday matinee. Bill's kids are dancing, and they're the most wonderful, highly integrated, wonderful kids with some bad boys in there, and Bill just knows how to treat the boys fabulously by letting them scream and run and then saying, focus.
So, Bill, you want to hit that real quick?
Tickets on sale now at garthfagandance.org, boxoffice.naz.edu, or call 585-454-3260 for your tickets to come see us at Nazareth College Arts Center.
GarthFaganDance.org.
GarthFaganDance.org, boxoffice.naz.edu, or call 585-454-3260.
You know, to what Bill said earlier, you know, what an arts town would do, they wouldn't even need to ask, I think, if we were a little bit better arts town, because when Garth Fagan's here and they're rolling out stuff like this, should be filling the house every night. But Garth, it's a real honor to have you. Thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you.
PJ, great having you.
Thank you, Evan.
Bill, thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
We'll see your kids out there as well.
That's right. They'll be out there ibanging away.
Rob, Kat, thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.